Welcome to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. This show is all about music and the people who make it. I'm going to be welcoming by phone Mr. Robbie Foulkes. Robbie is a singer-songwriter, Americana troubadour. He's got a brand new album out that teamed him up with no less than Linda Gail Lewis, Jerry Lee Lewis's little sister. The album is called Wild, 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 and it is a bit wild. You'll hear selections from it. You'll also hear some selections from some of Robbie's other albums. And see Robbie tonight at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan. We'll be right back at you. I'm Tom Lounges. Thank you for tuning in here at 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. This program is called Midwest Beat. It's all about music and the people who make it. The gentleman you're going to be hearing by phone that'll join us shortly has been on this program a couple of times in the past. I'm talking about Mr. Robbie Foulkes. He is a singer, a recording artist, instrumentalist. He's Americana, he's a troubadour, and he has got a brand new album out. Now, Robbie's got a lot of albums that we've featured in the past. This new one just came out on August 10th, and it's a duets album in traditional classic country style. Robbie is teaming up with none other than Linda Gail Lewis, who happens to be Jerry Lee Lewis's little sister. She's got all the feistiness and fire that Jerry's got, and, well, Robbie, he's got his own share as well. Let's play a song that features Robbie. This one is kind of, I guess it could be autobiographical for many that grow up in the South. It's aptly titled, I Just Lived a Country Song. Robbie Foulkes.
Swinging doors and whiskey river, the first words I learned to say, Willie Merlin, all those outlaws, was all that Daddy'd ever play. These beer joints where I'm working, I started working at 16. Now if I look a little ragged, must be those 30 years between. My first single hit the big time. For a while there I was hot. I can't recall the early 90s. These last 10 I'd rather not. There are mornings when I wonder what I can show of her all my time. But I sure can sing with feeling. Whiskey River, take my mind. This honky-tonking way of living, I've been living way too long. Excuse me if I wait for heaven, I just lived a country song. Screaming through the wall, I'm laying in my jeans and dreaming about a girl in Omaha. Well, that's been 20 years and counting. I can't go back there anyhow. I've hitched my wagon to a heartache, and Lord, I'm sleeping with it now. This honky-tonking way of living will make the weak out of the strong. Don't tell your troubles to me, mister, until you've lived a country song. Cry. I'm so lonesome I could cry. This honky-tonkin' way of living, I've been living way too long. Excuse me if I'm late for heaven, I've just lived a country song. And if I never get to heaven, it's 'cause I lived a country song.
Sometimes you just feel like that, don't you? Like you just lived a country song, drove a truck, drank a beer, shot some whiskey down. Robbie Foulkes, the guy that's singing it there with some help from the amazing Linda Gail Lewis, is on the phone with us. He is our guest. He'll be performing at Acorn Theater tonight in Three Oaks, Michigan. Robbie, how are you?
I'm good, man. That sounds good. That's a good song you just played.
I love that song. In fact, I really love this whole album. I'm in this kind of country troubadour rockabilly kind of mode ever since I interviewed Wanda Jackson a couple months ago.
How is she doing?
She's doing good. She was actually in the hospital for a while, and then she said she was going to be doing some work with Joan Jett producing her. And I don't know if that album ever came out or not. It was the follow-up to the Jack White album she did. So she's a great lady.
I wonder what else Joan Jett has produced. I'd like to take a shot at a Wanda record, as long as all of these numbskulls are producing her. That, you know, get me in there.
I'll see what I can do. It's interesting. You are based in Chicago still, correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, you came here from the Carolinas. Was it to go to college? Because I know you went to Columbia, correct?
Yeah, well, I came from the North Carolina, a little place called Creedmoor in 1980 to go to school in New York. And then after that, I came here in 83 after dropping out of school and doing a bunch of ill-advised things in New York. I just came here and have been here ever since.
What keeps you in Chicago?
What keeps me here?
Yeah.
Family, you know, my wife and her job are here. And then my grandson and, well, my two younger sons are in college, but my oldest son and grandson are, you know, they own a house here. Everybody's kind of rooted here in Chicago.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a little rough to leave when the family's all here.
Well, you know, not that I like my family so much, but, yeah, they're keeping me here.
But you're coming from the South and always doing songs referencing the South. I thought maybe, you know, you'd be tired of these cold winters we have over by the lake.
I hate them. And, yeah, I always had it in mind that, well, I'll come up here for a while, and then 1 year turn to 10, and 10 to 30, and so on. But I still think that eventually, before I die, I'll get back where the weather's a little better. It's just kind of hard up here.
This album took me by surprise. I never would have guessed you and Linda Gail Lewis would have teamed up. How did that happen?
Well, it happened a little bit by accident in the sense that I was producing a record just on her, and then at some point it turned into a duo record, so that we didn't go into it with that idea. But the way that I met her was that we were doing shows for the same promoter. That's how we first met each other. It was in Sweden about 10 years ago, and I did a little work on, I think, two of her records, you know, just singing and playing, and then played just a little bit with her on stage, and we figured out pretty quickly that we sang well together and we enjoyed each other's company, and I had the idea that I could help her with some recordings, and we just kind of went from there.
It's a natural sounding team up, the two of you trading off your harmonies and your leads and things back and forth. This is the first duet that I'm familiar with that you've done as far as with a female singer, is that correct?
No, not quite. I did, let's see, on my first record, I did a female duet with Ora Jones, and then on my third record, I did a duet with Lucinda Williams, and on my fourth with Kelly Willis, and on my fifth with my wife Donna. So I've actually done it quite a lot now that I'm thinking about it and counting it up.
Somehow I missed a lot of that. I'm familiar with Upland Stories, country love songs, things. I just can't remember you trading vocals with a female before. My bad.
Yeah, definitely not on my last two records. But even on the last two records, I do a fair amount of singing with Jenny Scheinman, who's also another good female singer and a good friend. And I think, my idea is always that particular blend of voices, like two good country singers together, one male, one female, is just one of my favorite things to hear. So I've gone back to that a lot on my records.
Country duets were a big deal in the 70s and then the 60s with George and Tammy, of course, and June and Johnny, and we just had so many different pairings. Do you think that's going to be something that's coming back? I've noticed quite a few people seem to want to get back into doing that. Are you seeing that to be a trend?
Gosh, I'm just the worst at these questions. I don't know how to predict the future in country music, but I know that, I mean, one of the best things that I heard recently was Chris Stapleton and his wife singing You Are My Sunshine. And I just think something that great sounding could never really go away. You know, I mean, that's my opinion.
You mentioned country and you have a very country sound. Do you consider yourself a country artist or?
I do.
Okay. You're in.
Yeah, I know there's a labeling ambiguity with me, and that, you know, when I got my Grammy nominations, it was in folk music, you know, it was under the folk category. And then sometimes, you know, when I'm reading about myself, they call me alt country, or on NPR yesterday they called me idiosyncratic country. And there's all sorts of prefixes and adjectives attached to it. But I think that I just think of myself as country. And when a neighbor asks me what I do, I say I'm a country musician. So I think that feels like to me like a really big category is one thing, you know. So I have a lot of, you know, varied musical interests, and most of them fit, you know, under a really broad definition of country music, you know, whereas they don't fit under any other big identifier like rock or jazz, but country is comfortable for me.
Okay. Well, country is splitting into many genres, just like rock has done. It's hard to label anything anymore because, like you said, you come from the town here where Wilco, Tweedy, all these different guys, cowpunk originated. It's kind of hard to define. And I've always had a problem trying to say what you were when people say, well, what is that you're listening to? Because from album to album, you go from country to more blues to more kind of rock. You mix it up a lot. And I was just wondering how you identified yourself. So country it is.
I think country. I mean, the mixing up a lot, like the two farthest most poles, I guess, of my records that I've at least put out officially, maybe the third one, which was called Let's Kill Saturday Night, and which had a lot of electric guitars and loud drums and stuff like that. And maybe one of the last two, which was softer and had some steel guitar and mandolins and banjos. But, you know, those instrumental landscapes that I just described both fit easily under even a kind of a narrow radio music definition of country, you know. So I think given that it's story songs, most of it, and it's about a guy who grew up in the South, and a lot of it refers to, you know, Southern places and old times, I think that puts it pretty well in the country mold.
Now, are you going to be performing shows with Linda? I don't think she's on the show here at the Acorn with you, is she?
No, we're doing... She doesn't live anywhere near me. She lives in Texas and spends most of her time in Europe. So we had to kind of plot it out. And we plotted out a three-week stretch in September and a week-long stretch in October. And then we're looking at next spring right now for some more. So that's all sort of concentrated touring. And it's me and her and Red Volkart and the rhythm section from the record. And what I'm doing up there this Friday is what I... is what I conventionally do, you know, like kind of all the time, which is, it's going to be a string bass and a mandolin and a fiddle, and everybody sings real well, and we do songs ranging across all my records. So we'll do a couple from the new one and several from the last, you know, two or three.
Will you be having anyone to sing her parts on the newer songs?
No, well, that song that you last played is one that we'll do and have been doing, and you know, if somebody was listening 10 minutes ago to that, you can see that it's me
right
singing, and she joins in on the tenor on the chorus. So, you know, tenor parts can be covered by a dude, and there's a dude in my group that'll cover that tenor part. So it's that kind of thing. There's one that she sings on the record that I just kind of sing. I kind of take over for, you know, my shows and sing her part. So and I guess we don't really do any of those where we're trading off line by line. You know, we don't cover those.
Okay. Now, this album, you mentioned you started out, it was her album, and you started producing. When did it turn into a partnership, musically speaking, besides a producer-client?
Well, the whole thing took a little while. I think we worked on that record for 2 and some years, maybe 2 years and a couple months. And just about halfway through, the people putting it out, Bloodshot, thought that they would rather put out something that had my name on the cover. They thought it might sell a little easier for them. So at that point, we made the switch. And it wasn't a huge switch in that, you know, I was already like aiming to write, you know, most of the songs. I think I wrote just over half the songs on that record. And I was already on one duo with her. But she was also, we also had a duo song in the can that was her and her daughter singing the duo. So we discarded that one. And then I thought of a couple more duos for us to sing. But the whole spirit and thrust of the record didn't necessarily, you know, undergo a radical change when that edict came down from above.
Did you record here in Chicago or did you record in Texas?
Both. We did two sessions in Chicago and two down in Austin.
Well, you work with Steve Albini quite a bit, and Steve's got such a track record. He's a legend here for the listeners here that don't know. He worked with artists like the Pixies, Nirvana, Cheap Trick, one of my good friends that's here on the show all the time, Robert Rolf Feddersen has recorded with him. And one of the things about Steve is that he is a big fan of tape and analog and the old school way of doing it, at least the best to my knowledge. Are you a disciple of that as well? Did you record analog? Did you go off tape?
Well, all of that is exactly right. And the analog thing is, I don't know, there's a, you know, I've worked with Steve since 1986, almost as soon as I got to town, or 2 years later, or whatever it was. So his methods and his prejudices have really been influential to me. And I've worked a lot with him over the last 30 years. And I do share his opinion that tape sounds better, and I do share my own opinion that tape is very expensive, and the editing function is significantly more cumbersome with tape than with software. So I'm a guy that likes to edit, and lately when I worked with Steve, like on these last two records, we're getting pretty nerdy now in this stuff. But lately, the method that I've enjoyed and have asked for when I go over to a studio is to have another guy that is computer savvy there to record all of the live tracking onto the computer and then to edit and then to throw it on tape and mix. And that's where Steve's skills come most into play on those recent sessions. So I don't have, I guess, what you would call a very radical, a very militant commitment to analog tape, but I do think it sounds better, and vinyl is still my favorite format. It's just so expensive, and I don't feel it's really crucial for listening enjoyment for the average or even way above average listener.
Are you releasing this on vinyl as well?
The Linda Gale record? Yeah, yeah. Not on vinyl.
Okay, because you had Upland was released on vinyl, as I recall.
It's just the label's decision, really, Tom. And and I'm so happy that, you know, any more that they feel that it's necessary to release on all three formats, CD, digital, and vinyl, in order to, you know, reach the most people.
I recently opened up a vinyl record store here in Northwest Indiana, and I am shocked at how many young folks. I thought it'd be all the codgers like me that grew up in the 60s and 70s that would be trying to chase their childhood, but it's the kids that are coming in and buying turntables.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I think we got lazy. We don't want to get up and flip the side. We just want that CD to play, but the kids are digging it.
Yeah, I've got a 21-year-old that is just crazy about vinyl, and irrationally, I think. And I have noticed that going to play a show in, where was I? Last week I was up in Maine, and for whatever reason, the audience was like real old, you know. They were all like over 60, I think. And I didn't sell a one. Like, I brought I think, 10 copies of two records and didn't sell any of the LPs. And then when I'll go to Portland, where I'm playing for, the average age is much, much younger for me in Portland, maybe a couple other hipstery places like that, I'll notice that it's sort of the opposite. Like, I'll sell hardly any CDs. So it's definitely a young person thing.
Yeah, that surprised me. And are you still a vinyl collector and stuff as well?
Well, I can't call myself a collector, but I do still buy. It's I was in Montana 2 months ago gigging, and they have a great record store there called Rockin' Rudy's, and I bought six old records and have listened to four since I got home with them.
Okay.
So my listening has slowed dramatically, but I still can't resist when I'm in a town with a good record store going over and dropping some money.
Now, when you're at the Acorn on Friday, are you going to be selling vinyl and CDs, and will you have the older stuff or just the new albums?
Yes to the vinyl, and as far as the older records, I'm trying to think what I usually bring out. I'm a guy with about maybe 13 or 14 records out.
Right.
But usually I just travel with the last 4 or 5. And as far as the first, you know, 8 or 9, some of them, a couple are out of print. And so they're not, you know, they're not eligible. And a couple of the others, I really don't like that much anymore, to tell you the truth. So I focus on the last 4 or 5.
All right. One of the songs on here that really jumped out at me, being a fan of Sun Records, being a fan of the rockabilly side of things, was It Came from the South. And I'm a sci-fi guy,
yeah,
too. In the beginning of that, was that taken from an old sci-fi movie, or did you replicate that?
Well, I should probably be quiet about it because, it's taken from Invaders from Mars, that great original William Cameron Menzies movie, which I love. But as we threw it in there in the studio, I happened to look at the Invaders from Mars on Wikipedia, and it had an explicit paragraph that that the ownership of the soundtrack was in so-and-so's name and was not to be used without without, you know, buying it or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just figured, you know, screw that and just threw it in. So I'm hoping nobody listens to this interview and
all
I'm
right.
in trouble.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that they do, but not for that reason. But let's go back. Let's do that one now. This is off that new album we were just talking about. Came out August 10th. It's Linda Gill Lewis and my guest Robbie Foulkes, and the album's Wild, Wild, Wild. And this is It Came from the South.
Every time I hear it, I'm as good as gone. Up or down, fast or real slow, that's all you hear on my radio. I never get tired, I can listen to it all night long. It scared a lot of people when it first hit town. They didn't understand what they were putting down, but it's lasted up until today, and we're still rocking around. It came from the South.
It came from real hard work, sweat from the plow, and poor people just pushing about. They made up a rhythm, trying to pass the time. It came from the truth, it came from the heart, it came from an old flat top guitar on a Saturday night underneath the old moonshine. Well, it scared a lot of people when it first hit town. They didn't understand what they were putting down, but it's lasted until today, and we're still rocking around. And when they look back, trying to figure it out, where it came from and what it's all about. It didn't come from outer space, it came from the sound.
it up until today, and we're still rocking it round.
And when they look back, trying to figure it out, where it came from and what it's all about,
it didn't come from outer space, it came from the south.
It didn't come from outer space, it came from the south.
It didn't come from outer space, it came from the sound.
It came from the south, but he came, well, from the Carolinas, and now he's in Chicago, and now he's talking to us here on NPR Radio, where he is always a welcome guest. I'm talking about Mr. Robbie Foulkes. He'll be performing, hopefully, that song at the Acorn Theater this Friday. Is that one on the list?
No.
Oh. That's one you should be doing. That is a good shake your butt boogie woogie tune that I think would get the whole house going.
Oh, it was good to hear. That was written by my friends, well, two friends, Al Anderson and Bill Lloyd.
From NRBQ?
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, I've had them on the show. It's been a while, but yeah, those are names I remember.
Well, it's fun because Al was the co-writer and the current guitarist from the Q, Scott Legan, is the guitar player on that track, so it kind of brings it full circle.
Was Al on the album as well? Or?
Al was not. But
oh, okay, but Scott was.
I mean, NRBQ has changed personnel several times over the years, but Scott's style is very Al Anderson influenced, and so it's a nod to him as well on there. And that song was an example of, like, when we were talking about duets and about the record changing from a solo to a duo record, that song, she came in and sang it, and we didn't realize it was keyed too low for her until we brought it up again to mix. And at that point, it was like, it was a little too late to change anything. And I thought, well, if we erase her first verse and chorus and I sing it, then it'll have me singing high, and maybe that'll work better when she comes in that key that's a little bit low for her, so the listener understands, you know, it's a little too high for the guy, a little too low for the lady. And that's how they came to be that way, and that's why when they changed it to a duet record that we were already, you know, a little bit in that direction.
Okay. What songs from this album are you going to do? I mean, is there a few handful that you can tell us about? There's 13 on the record total.
So, besides the one that I mentioned, I Just Lived a Country Song, I imagine that we'll do the Memphis song, and I'm trying to think what else is on that record. The Memphis song.
Well, Round Too Long would be a good one.
Well, except that it's all about her biography.
Right.
So it'd be strange for somebody else to sing it, I think. There's one more that I can't quite bring the title to mind. I think there's three from that record that we've been doing.
Foolmaker's one that you have lead on.
Oh, that's a good song right there. Well, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it's just those two.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about 2017. You were nominated for Grammys not once but twice. You got the Best American Roots Song with Alabama at Night, which I want to play here for my listeners to kind of show a different side. And then, of course, the folk album, as you mentioned. Even though you're a country artist, they put you in the folk category. Upland Stories. Tell me about that album. It seemed quite a process, the writing on that.
Well, I guess like any record, I sat down to write a bunch of songs for it and sort of figure out what the record's going to sound like as you go. And, you know, by the time that you've got five or six that seem like, you know, you're really fond of them and believe in them and want to put them on the record, then they kind of give you an idea of what the style is and what the variety framework or, you know, spectrum of the sounds is going to be. So that's what I did for that record, which I've done on a lot of records in the past. And it seemed like that there was some reflective autobiography on the record, and then there was also some sort of socio-political, I don't know, commentary is the word, but songs with socio-political resonance, in other words, talking about people in hardship in America.
Well, America is a hard religion is a prime example of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Alabama at Night, the one that was up for the Grammy, was another one. And I mean, there were songs that were kind of sounded like they were commenting on something that happened 80 years ago, but meant to be interpreted as, oh, that could be now too.
Right. Right. Well, let's play Alabama at Night. This is the one that got all the attention. Is there a specific story behind this? And were you shocked that you got the nod for this song?
I shouldn't have been shocked, but I was. I pursued the nomination avidly, you know, and I joined the NARIS organization and campaigned for it. My wife and I spent money on it. But then for some reason, I just wasn't expecting it to pay off. And when they called me with the news about it, I was kind of flabbergasted. And I remember I was on my way into the pool for my swimming coach was waiting for me. And because I take swimming lessons, and I thought, well, I'll just go tell her all about what just happened. And then I thought, no, that's stupid. I'm not going to like tell little strangers, start bragging. But anyway, I was really excited about it. And should have seen it coming, but I didn't. And then I forget what your other, well, just about the song that you're about to play. It's kind of based on a James Agee work from a long time ago that he did with the photographer Walker Evans called Let Us Now Praise Famous Men. And it's kind of from their point of view about a journey down to Alabama to photograph poor people.
Okay. This is it. This is Alabama at Night. It's off the 2016 Upland Stories album that got a nomination for the Grammys. And this is it. Check it out. We'll be back with Robbie after this.
A red tailhawk sat watchful at the faded edge of day. The phone poles and the pines rose from the scoured clay. The sun was slipping toward the gulf in its own good time. And you would not think of death if you drove on past the signs. The old men at the roadhouse weren't too polite to stare. Where we'd come from wasn't home, and we were far from even there. The camera around my neck drew suspicious eyes to me, but we were not there to talk, we were only there to see. When their faces had said nothing, it was that I stepped outside. And in the instant I knew I would not forget the sight. Alabama at night, Alabama at night. You took the wheel up 119, I scanned the road ahead, trying to let all I could see cover up all that I'd read. That hotel would not likely let a working man lie down. Like a current through its walls ran the sorrow and the sound. And I knelt down to let it in me, sure it would come if I gave it time. And I fumbled amongst 100 words, but words don't do it right. Alabama at night, Alabama at night. Through sunlit rooms, the wealthy walk, and the pale unshaven men, to stand before each frame 5 seconds, maybe 10, and to unveil all the maker wanted to portray. But I'm not there to talk, and if I were, I wouldn't say. Across the rough cut branches and the wide gray shadowed sky, a child not far from birth, with the end etched in her eyes. The morning star above her and a hymn upon the breeze, but pours no sacred song, pours a disease. So patiently we wait here as onward it rolls. Alabama at night, Alabama at night, Alabama at night.
Ooh. Alabama at Night off the Upland Stories album, recorded in 16 and nominated in 17. And that is from my guest tonight, which is Robbie Foulkes. He'll be performing this Friday, August 24th, at the Acorn Theater in nearby Three Oaks, Michigan, just a hop and a jump down I-94 to get there from here. And we're going to talk a little bit about songwriting. That song, beautiful visuals that you can get in your head as you're listening to your voice on that. Is there a method or a style or a rhyme or reason as to how songs come to you, Robbie?
It's a little mysterious, to me, Tom, and you know, I just taught a songwriting camp at a festival in Colorado, and I assigned them. I said go out tonight and try three methods of getting into a song. First, try to get into it through the title. Second, try to think of a circumstance or an episode from your life, you know, a situation, and start writing from that point of view. And the third one was just like screw around on your guitar, mandolin, whatever it is, and hum and try to get into it that way through chords and melody.
Mm-hmm.
And that last way, I would say, is how I end up getting into the song about, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 out of 10 times. I think most of the time it's that particular window, but I don't really understand how that first spark comes. It just seems to come from trial and error, and from listening to the sound of my instrument and voice and trying out 100 different things.
Do you normally write to sit down and write the songs for a specific album, or do you just kind of woodshed and stockpile them and pull them out as you need them?
Well, it's kind of both, record to record, depending on what record it is. And anymore, I think, you know, these days I tend more to write toward a particular project, and because the writing isn't really that enjoyable to me, you know, I kind of dread it a lot of the time, going
really?
Off alone, and it's just not enjoyable, you know. Like performing and traveling is all social, and it's really fun and enjoyable, but being alone in a room and knocking out this stuff isn't that enjoyable for me. So so that is to say, I don't rush into it, and I tend not to have 50 songs just hanging around waiting to be combed through for the next project.
Well, as far as writing alone, if you're working on a project like this one, Wild, 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 with Linda Gill Lewis, I imagine that there were opportunities for you guys to co-write. And as you mentioned, you've hung around with some pretty big names here in Chicagoland and throughout the music business. Have you tried a lot of collaborating? Is it just not work?
I've definitely done it with several people over the years, and I don't really mind doing it, but it's never my preferred thing. And as I was saying earlier, more and more these days, I'm writing from memories and autobiographies. So there's just not a lot of point in having, you know, another person there changing words around.
Right. Well, how was it for you to write, we were just talking about it, and again, it would be awkward for you to sing it, but Round Too Long, you wrote the story of her life. How was that? I mean, how did you get into her head and get into her life that you could write it? Because it sounds like something like she's telling her story. How did that
about? the beginning lyric of that, which illustrates why I wouldn't be singing it, and also what you're talking about, the
sister of a hellraiser. That's an awkward line.
Yeah, daughter. I'm a sister of a hellraiser, daughter of an old tomcat.
Right.
And it's so fun to write, you know, and it's so fun just to get out of your own mental prison and imagine that you're, you know, in somebody else's experience. And I've loved just you know, batting that idea around in my head all my life of that picture of the Lewis family. You know, it's just one of those archetypal scenarios for me, like growing up in the Lewis family, being one of those kids or Elvis too, you know, in the same way, just growing up that deprived and then hitting pay dirt, you know, which changes the fortunes of the entire family very dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
When the kid's, 18, 19 years old. And then Linda's particular position in all of that madness that ensued from Jerry Lee Lewis and his traveling band for, she worked with him through the, middle late 60s through the mid 80s, I think. And, to think of a young, good-looking woman going around with those guys all those years and singing in the show, it's kind of interesting to contemplate. But anyway, her early years, you know, are also interesting because, as I say in the song, she was drinking liquor early. She had early marriages. I think she had three marriages started and ended by the time that she was 16.
Wow.
And, just a really... wild. Well, the record's called Wild, Wild, Wild. So
right, for a reason.
A living embodiment, yeah.
One of the songs I want to get to that is a lot different from what we've played, which is more of the rockabilly thing, is Fool Maker. I had referenced that before, and that would be one that would be great to hear you perform. And that has more of a bluesy, maybe not blues, but more of an R&B kind of groove to it. That stands out a little bit different from the rest of the album, and we're going to play that one. But can you tell me what was the making of that? Because it does stand out.
Well, we needed something for me to be singing on it, and I came up with that one. I've been working a little bit on and off with these lady singers, and they work in the church, in the black church around Chicago, doing that kind of music. But they also work with Aretha, who just died, and with bigger singers like that as backup singers. And I first heard of them through a show on TV called Empire, and did a couple sessions with them. And anyway, if you're going to play that song, the listener will hear them quite clearly. They really change the tone of the whole track because it's so great and authentic and real sounding as soon as they start singing. So to me, that's kind of that and the B3 are probably the emotional center of that song.
Right. This definitely stands out from the rest of the songs and for different reasons, but this is a great song. It's one of my favorites. It's Fool Maker. We'll be back a final time with Robbie after this.
I felt the danger when I first looked in your eyes. I was young, headstrong, but not so worldly wise. Too immature to know just what you were. You were a fool. Your smooth line of talking should have been a clue. Moments of anger when your real face showed through. Young hearts were your raw parts. Any trusting soul would do. You were a fool. Plans. Fool maker, Lord, I fell right in your hands. You loved me and left me. Oh, that's all fools are for. You made me, played me, but I won't be fooled no more. 'Cause I won't be the same since I played the game with a fool,
fool, fool maker.
Yeah.
Manhead B3 sounds great.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, I forgot. I was sitting here with my cans in my head going like, wow, does that sound good? I haven't heard a sound like that in a long, long time. Robbie Foulkes is my guest. Robbie, that song, like I said, stands out. Where did that one come from? How did that fit on this record?
Well, I hear what you're saying about it standing out, but we haven't talked about Linda's piano playing, and she plays piano on that, and I think she sings kind of in the background with those ladies. So she's definitely... adding her weight and her voice to the track as well. Her piano style, and you hear just the simplest little arpeggios and figures mm-hmm. in that song, but there's something about it, and it goes to the heart of what makes her great as a musician. There's something about it that, like, anybody could play those notes, but nobody would sound quite like that. And when she plays those simple lines, I feel like I hear the church, and I hear the 50s, and I hear reverence and southernness, and I hear all of these like biographical qualities that are specific to her, like genetic and inbuilt. And in that way, she reminds me of one of these players like Spooner Oldham or somebody like that. That that's a real simple player, but a really like hard folk authentic sound to everything that they do.
What's next for you? You've done an incredible album here with Linda. Are you going to be working with anyone in particular, producing, or are you going to go on to your next solo album?
Well, I'm working on a record for a great singer right now. Her name's Brennan Lee, and we're maybe about a third of the way into that, and I'm not sure when that'll be done or out. And then after that, I guess we're talking about next year. I'm hoping to get going on a bluegrass record sometime next year, but I'm not sure what or when. And that's all. The main hump is doing these dates with Linda and getting my body in shape for I haven't toured with a big band and a drum kit and a loud presentation for so many years that I'm just hoping not to have a heart attack, you know, during the run.
You know what I could hear you doing, and it hasn't been done in a long time, and when you said big band, it made me flash back to Lyle Lovett and his big band. To take a big band format with some of the stuff that you do, because it is all across the board, would that be something that might be on your bucket list or something that you'd at least put on a back burner?
I'd love to do that sometime. If one of your listeners wants to mail me like $20,000 to pay for that on the road, because it eats up money pretty fast.
Yeah.
But I had a record out of 50 songs in 2009, and we did a couple dates on the record with a 9-piece band, and the band had Nora O'Connor, Danny Barnes, and Jenny Scheinman. It was a pretty heavyweight band. We did 4 dates, and as I said, 9 people, and that's the closest I've got to what you're talking about. It was super, super fun and memorable, but it was definitely a big undertaking in terms of everything, expense and everything else, too.
Okay. Outside writing for anybody? Anything in the works? Any songs we'll be hearing from your pen on any other albums?
Missy Raines, if anybody knows her, the great bluegrass bassist and Americana singer. Her next record has one of my tunes on it. And I'm trying to think. That's all I can think of offhand that's coming out soon.
Okay. All right, well, we'll let you go. We'll see you on Friday. Before I do, help me pick the final song. I'm looking at maybe Temptation, maybe Wild, 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 or Red Wagon. What do you think represents well?
I think any of those. How about you pick?
Okay, well, then let's do Wild, Wild, Wild. That is the title track, after all. Robbie Foulkes has been my guest. Catch him tonight at Acorn Theater. And again, don't let the Michigan address scare you if you're from Chicago or Northwest Indiana. It literally is right across first exit from the state line, and you can get there in a heartbeat. It's only a couple turns off the highway. So, Robbie, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time.
It's been a pure pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
Best of luck with the album, and I hope to pick up a vinyl copy of that. I'm really loving this record, and the digital just doesn't do it for me. I want to hear that needle in the groove.
I'll have them mail you one.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Robbie Foulkes, you can follow him online, and, you can hear him right here on National Public Radio, the Midwest Beat program on Lakeshore Public Radio. Let's play it. That is Robbie Foulkes, and kicking in with him there, Linda Gail Lewis, Jerry Lee's little sister. So Robbie Foulkes will be at the Acorn Theater this Friday the 24th. Thanks to Rob Harkle and Brightside Music. Thanks to Robbie, and of course, thanks to you for being here.